picked up material last week, then you have this week's material. Last week I handed out part one and part two of the geography of Palestine. That's where we're going to continue this morning. I do have material for next week. It's called Old Testament Lands. And it's not out there yet, but before you leave today, after services, check back there. I'll have it copied. It'll be back there if you want to take that with you. I'm not sure if we'll get to it. There's a lot of stuff in these two lessons, and I want to make sure we cover some of it. So we may not get through everything that the rest of the lesson today. I'm gonna circle back and hit a couple of things that we missed last week. So we may still have some of this lesson to do next week, and then start the Old Testament lands. But try to make sure you pick one up. It'll be back there. By the time worship is over tonight, it'll be back there on the table for you to be able to get. All right, so last week we started talking about Palestine, and just this is kind of part two, but we might just bring up a couple of quick things to kind of refresh our memory as to where we've been and where we're headed. So, you know, it talked about last week as you look at the map that the land of Palestine is kind of divided up in parallel zones. And when you look at it that way, it helps you see sometimes why God did some of the things that he did and why there was a certain people in a certain place. And so we talked about these different zones, the Mediterranean Sea, obviously, on the border, then the coastal plain is zone number one as you look up there on the map. The Western Hill Country, it's what we were talking about last week when we stopped, and we're going to say a few more things about that today. Then the Jordan Valley, hopefully we'll get to that and talk about that. There's some very interesting things about the Jordan Valley that we want to understand. The High Tableland, which is on the other side of the Jordan, and then the Arabian Desert. So that's kind of the spread as you go across there, and as you look at them in kind of long parallel districts, that's where you see. And so again, keep in mind, you're talking about something that's 25, 30 miles wide up here at the top and, you know, maybe 50, 60, 75 miles wide down here at the bottom. So lots of different things that go in between there. And if you read through the lesson, you realize all kinds of different climates that are in there too and different things that happen. And so don't take for granted when you read things like, you know, the about Samson, you know, killing lions, you know, there's lions in here. And we talked last week, there's crocodiles in part of it. You know, there's a reason that the climate changes so much as it does because of where the Dead Sea is and the Mediterranean and the mountains. So there's all kinds of things to appreciate as we consider that. And we want to keep that in mind. So we talked just briefly last week, we talked about the coastal plain as we're moving across there and about it having, you know, basically three different regions. And one thing I don't remember if I mentioned some of this, so I'm going to bring some of it up just so that we create this picture in our mind about what's what. And so the coastal plain is not just a flat, open plain. We think of the plains sometimes and you start thinking about Nebraska or Kansas and it's just flat and you can see for miles. These are actually kind of, you know, as it said in the lesson, rolling hills, 200 or 300 feet in height. It's something that's very well watered. And, you know, as some of you came and mentioned to me last week as you're talking about it, you know, this is why it was a coveted area. This is one of the reasons God explained to the children of Israel, this is the land that flows with milk and honey. This is going to be a great place to do different things and to be involved with different things. And he wanted them to take it. That was his intention, for them to take the land, all of the land. And they would have access to this part of it, not just some of the parts that they did take. And so, you know, that's something to keep in mind. God had planned the best for his children. And you see, as you read in Joshua, not to get too far off track, that they mostly did what he wanted as far as overtaking the land, but they didn't drive everybody out. And so they didn't get some of the best because they didn't fulfill his plan like they were supposed to. And that wasn't God's fault. Wasn't his problem that they didn't receive everything that was promised. Some of it had to do with how they approached it. And so I'm going to keep that in mind and we'll think more about that as we go through some of this. So this coastal plain was very well watered. It talks about lagoons and springs and streams running across it into the sea. And so when you think about some of those terms, a spring or a lagoon or a stream, sometimes we don't associate that with we think of Palestine, we think of this dry, arid climate, and that's just, you know, lots of sand and browns and reds, and that's not what this area was like. And so I'm going to keep that in mind as you think about some of that. So different plains that we talked about through there. Then we started talking about the hill country. So, the one thing I did want to point out, the coastal plain area, basically through here, I'm going to back up one screen. They call that the coastal plain area basically through here. This Phoenicia up here, we talked about the Phoenicians a little bit being kind of seafaring people. But notice you look at Mount Carmel here. Mount Carmel is kind of the part that is still part of the hill country. If you look at the hill country, it is a parallel zone, but it kind of goes up and juts out this way. So that's kind of the end of the coastal plain. It gets cut off by Mount Carmel there. And so when you look at this, that's one of the mountains of the hill country, and we see some history that goes on in Mount Carmel. But think about the hill country here. It starts with these mountains clear up here in the northern border of what we consider to be Palestine. And I think a couple weeks ago I showed you a picture, Mount Hermon up that way, or Mount Lebanon, and, snow-covered year-round, 10,000 feet. Think about the Rocky Mountains. That's about the size of some of the mountains in the Rockies. And that's up there, but by the time you get down here to Jerusalem, anybody remember how tall the mountain around Jerusalem is, or Mount of Olives, or Bethlehem? See if anybody read your lesson. Any guesses? Yeah, 2,000 or 3,000. Yeah, Bethlehem's around 3,800 feet. Jerusalem, yeah, around 3,000. Mount of Olives in the 3,000 range. So, yeah, think about how much that drops, this mountain range, as it comes, comes down this way. And there's a big valley area right here that we're going to talk about for just a second. So just, kind of get the picture. You've got 200 or 300 foot hills, very fertile valley. You can see the Mediterranean Sea, and it starts to get bigger. So now you're going up into the hill country, where you've got the, a little bit larger thing. So, the hill country was west of the Jordan. So between, I'm going to use east and west here for anybody who likes it and people who don't know what it is, who don't talk that way a lot, I'll try to point it out. So here's the Jordan River. So the hill country west of the Jordan, which is on this side, and east of the coastal plain. So basically area number two here. That was, a lot of times throughout the New Testament, the Israelite stronghold. That's where they ended up settling a good portion of their people. So remember when Joshua led the army into the land, they found the Canaanites, as I was saying a minute ago, well established in the plains. And God would have delivered those things into their hands. He told them that he was going to do that. I mean, look at the verses here. Judges 1 and verse 19. The Lord was with Judah and he took possession of the hill country, but he could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain because they had chariots of iron. So it's talking about one of the judges there, but you think about some of the things that they ran up against and think about their history. When the nation of Israel, before they wandered in the wilderness, they went, they saw the land, they sent the spies, they saw, wow, these people are huge, there's all kinds of walled cities, we're scared, and that caused, they didn't trust in God, that caused their wandering in the wilderness. So they come back from that, and they are trusting in God, but they're still, God would have been with them. They could have taken these things, and they could have received the blessings of some of that. So just, remember that as you start to think about that. Over in Joshua 16:10, it talks about his conquest. They did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer, so the Canaanites have lived in the midst of Ephraim to this day, but have been made to do forced labor. Sometimes as you read through the history of what's happening, the children of Israel thought, well, we didn't drive them all the way out, but we've conquered them. And that's okay. Is that what God said to do? Move your head this way. Some of you are. Right. And there was reasons, right? Reasons were the influence was there. And marrying into those types of nations. And that wasn't what God wanted. He wanted them driven out. And wanted his people to have the blessings of this land. But they had to give themselves to God's purpose to be able to do that. So you think about the hill country where they dwelt a lot of times. They could have had the more fertile coastal plain region. So, we mentioned Galilee last time. Galilee is divided into, you know, upper and lower, and it's up there nestled between Mount Carmel and the Sea of Galilee, and there's a valley there that's a very rich and fertile valley. A couple of rivers flow through there, and that's where Galilee is, near the, what's called the Leontes River. I feel like I'm talking really fast, but I'm looking at the clock and I'm trying to go. So, you know, keep that in mind. We talked about that a little bit. I showed some pictures of the Sea of Galilee. And remembering as you read about the Sea of Galilee, there's one side of it that is easy to be able to, you know, Jesus was standing in a boat and preaching to the people. There's another side of it has, you know, sheer cliffs that you can't do anything with that side. And so that's why you find him where you do in a couple of different places. I want to bring up, we just started talking about the Valley of Jezreel, which is the shaded area up there. And here's where you find some of the hill country coming down, you know, kind of leveling out a little bit. And also at the foot of some of these mountains, it creates this very fertile valley. This was a very important area, both militarily and commercially. This was an area that you had to pass through. A couple of the way of the sea and the way of Shur, some of the main paths we talked about last week about highways. You know, they don't have interstates. There's a certain way that you have to go to travel through the land. And, you know, it goes through this Valley of Jezreel. So you can imagine the commerce that took place there. If you want to hold somebody off from getting from north to south, you know, you've got the Jordan River keeping them from going one way. You've got the Mediterranean from keeping them from going the other way. You got to come through this valley. And so, you know, appreciate that. And as we get into some of the history here in a few weeks and read about some different battles that happened, and kings going from one side to the other, like, you know, Syria coming down and Egypt coming up, you got to go through this way. And so, you know, appreciate what that meant for God's people at those different times. So again, one of the most important areas to think about with that. All right, the central hill country. We hadn't really talked about this much, but as you're starting to work your way down from the top to the bottom, here's where you see some other mountains that we talk about sometimes as we think about the Old Testament story and some in the New Testament. So Mount Gilboa, Mount Ebal, Mount Gerizim, all in the 3,000 foot range. What's that compared to here in the U.S.? Anybody think of some mountains that are about that high? What's that? Yeah, Ozarks. What else? I heard somebody else say. Yeah. So, you know, think about the Appalachian Mountains and that range. You know, now you're into these mountains that are kind of this high. Still a border, still formidable, but not impassable, not snow-capped. But so you see some different things that take place in those types of regions. So look at some of these passages. This is it talks about in the lesson here that this is where God made the promise to Abraham. Mount Gilboa, the edge of the Jezreel Valley that we were talking about, is, you know, in the area of Shechem is where God first promised to give the land to Abraham's descendants. You read there in verse 6, Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, the oak of Moreh, and at the time the Canaanites were in the land, and the Lord appeared to him and said, to your offspring, I will give this land. And so as you start to see some of the things that happened in different places, you kind of see that God had a specific plan, and you know, there was an altar built. We're going to notice different altars that were built on different mountains or in different valleys, and later what city was built there, and so there's significance in those type of things as we kind of go through some of this. So this particular mountain range was a great place to see different things. It was here that Joshua and his army set up a monument, because also from these peaks you could see out the 25 miles across the coastal plain. You could see to the Mediterranean Sea. So when you look at some of these, you know, here's a picture of some of those mountains, and you know, here's the valley of a picture of the Valley of Jezreel that I was talking about. So you've got from one angle, you've got some of the mountains in the background, well watered, fertile, rivers running through there. But you know, these were places where, you know, here's a city built on the edge of Mount Ebal. These were places that were easy to see the land. They were places that you could easily defend. There were places that God took his people to be able to see some of the things that were happening and some of the things that he wanted them to do. So I I forget what other passage I have in here. Oh, this is the one in Joshua. I was talking about it and I didn't flip to it. So yeah, it talks there in Joshua 8 and verse 30, you know, on Mount Ebal is where he had them build this altar. I'm not going to read the whole thing for sake of time, but I want to put some of these passages up so that you see as we're talking about these things and say, well, this happened here, or this happened here. The Bible mentions them specifically, that's where it was. And being able to appreciate where that was, oh, okay, now I see why, you know, God did that there, or why they were, or where they were when this happened. I think those are important things for us to notice. So just, you know, as you think about the hill country, then, you know, the lower hill country or the last part of it there, you've got about a 50-mile stretch of land and you've got dome-like mountains as you saw in some of the things that we pointed out already. If you look, if you have your lesson material there, and I think it's page 4. Yeah, my pages are numbered the same as yours. On page 4, about the second paragraph down, it talks about Bethlehem. So what's significant that happened in Bethlehem? Christ is the birthplace of Christ. So, you know, in Bethlehem, it talks about that, about being about 38 feet above the Dead Sea, 14 miles away. It talks about the Mount of Olives and how the land falls from there to the Dead Sea. So when you're looking at this area here, I guess what I want to point out is you've got Jerusalem, you've got the Mount of Olives on the edge, you've got Bethlehem, all these near the top of this hill country, and not very far away, you've got the Dead Sea, which we'll talk about specifically, maybe not this morning, maybe next week. So if this is 1,200, almost 1,300 feet below sea level, and these are, let's say, close to 3,000, you got a 5,000-foot drop in 14 miles. That's a lot. And that affects the climate. And so, and that's what we'll kind of notice as we get through some of this is, you know, when you think about the Mediterranean today, and you say, if somebody says, oh, I'm going to vacation to the Mediterranean, what kind of climate do you think if they're going to go hang out on the Mediterranean Sea? Kind of warm and, you know, moist, ocean type, climate. Well, so you've got that and you've got that weather. Whoops. I hit the wrong button. You've got that weather blowing this way, you know, kind of gently coming up the coastal plain. That's a nice fertile area, well-watered, moist. And then you hit some of these mountains, goes up, and between these mountains right here and this desert basically over here, is one of the warmer places on Earth, you've got this huge valley that drops down. We'll talk about it here later this week or next week. You do a science experiment, you get an interesting climate change in there. And that's why we have the Dead Sea, the Salt Sea, and, you know, the evaporation rate that's in there. So just kind of appreciate as Jesus was walking back and forth between these places, or as the prophets that we read about, like, you know, Elijah and Elisha, the ones that we think about all the time, you know, going from Mount Carmel and fleeing down into these areas and some of the mountain areas or the wilderness of Judah. You know, why is that a wilderness? It has to do with the climate and how the land is laid out. You know, when we think of a wilderness, we don't always think about what is talked about here, but, you know, we'll try to appreciate that, what that is. So the hill country, you know, makes up part of that. And so as you think about this region all the way down, and the children of Israel settling there in the Old Testament, you know, from up here in mountains that are 5,000 and 6,000 feet down to the valley and then climbing up into these mountains in this area. A lot of them settled in here. Nice stronghold, a little bit of security. You know, we've got some places to hide. We've got still some places that we can graze and grow things, but, you know, we're above the enemy. And they didn't have the fortitude to take what they could have taken and control all of it. So, you know, they ended up dwelling and kind of settling there. Last part of the hill country, I guess, that they mention here in the lesson, and I'll mention too, is the area of Negev. So, you know, that's kind of the bottom of The bottom of Palestine is what that's often considered. A buffer zone between, we don't have that on the map here, but if you keep going south of here, you get into, you can't see my pointer if I do that, the triangle-shaped Sinai Peninsula. Drier, more wilderness, more barren. So that's the, kind of the last buffer zone before you get there, and the climate starts to change. You've come out of the hills and into a drier desert area. And this is also, another break off of one of the trade routes. We talked last week about, this way of the sea trade route. It's this dotted line right here. Well, down here where things kind of split apart, you can also go this way, the way of Shur. And so that goes through the Negev area and then right across the tops of the hills. And it crosses right there on purpose. There's a reason that it crosses the Jordan River right there. We'll talk about that here in a few minutes. So, yes, sir.
Have you been there?
I have not. No. Nope. Just me and the internet. That's all. It's the only place I've been there on. So it's if you have, I have heard, there's different gospel preachers that take trips to there and take people with them. It's really interesting to see, to be able to go and kind of put things together. Well, let's talk for a few minutes, about the Jordan Valley, and that's probably all we're going to get through, and then we'll talk about the other side of the Jordan next week. So, and again, last week, this week, and maybe next week, it's a lot of information. I'm just trying to hit the highlights. You really have to read through the material to gather everything about it and get some of the details that make the Bible story really come alive when you appreciate some of the things that are happening. So I'm doing a lot of talking these 3 weeks, and hopefully we'll start making some applications about some of the history that took place in some of these areas and why it's important as we move forward. But the Jordan Valley is an interesting part of it. If you read this part of it, I thought this was fascinating when I first learned this a few years ago. The Jordan Valley is a river that we hear about all the time, the Jordan River. But it's not something they could use for irrigation or for really a water source. Remember what Naaman said about the Jordan River? What did he say? Yeah, he said it was filthy. He said, aren't there much better rivers in Damascus than the Jordan River? And there's reasons why the Jordan River wasn't super usable. And so you start to think about that. It's part of what they call the Great Rift Valley. And I should have put a map up for that, but I thought that was really interesting to think about. So the Jordan River is part of this Great Rift Valley that actually starts clear up here on the map. the northeastern portion of the Mediterranean Sea. And it's a rift that goes all the way down through here and keeps going down through Africa and Egypt, or that area, includes the Red Sea, includes is it the Gulf of Aqaba, I think. It's kind of a trench that's about 4,000 miles long, altogether. And, it's a fault line, basically, is where this river falls and where the Jordan Valley is, which is the reason that, one of the reasons that it moves so fast and that it drops so much from one end of the other to Palestine. So that's kind of neat to think about, when you understand part of what's going on with it. The portion that we're looking at that I think is circled, or the portion that we're thinking about for the most of the Bible story, is called El Gor today. That's the part where the Dead Sea is and the Sea of Galilee. That's the section that you see encircled right now is the part that we hear most about in the Bible story. Whether it's the Old or New Testament, that's where when it's mentioning the Jordan River or the Sea of Galilee, that's where most things happen, is that area that you see right there. So of this 4,000-mile stretch, we're talking about, 80, 90 miles of it, where a lot of these types of things happen. So, the Jordan Valley it talks about is very narrow. It ranges anywhere from 2 miles wide to 15 miles wide. It has towering cliffs on either side. in parts of it. It talks about that there is lush tropical growth, kind of jungle-like, and the Bible talks about different things that you encounter because of that. When you think about what's on either sides of the valley, you see the green there. So between the Sea of Galilee and part of the Dead Sea, you have, you know, a different climate than you have right down around the Dead Sea. And again, it has to do with the height of the walls on either side of it and how those vary as you go down through, you go down through that area. So, you know, one of the places that they had a scripture there, I don't know if you read it or not, but in 2 Kings, if you remember the story or the account of the prophet, who was, I think it's the one going to talk to Jeroboam, and he didn't obey God, and it says a lion, you know, attacked him and killed him. Well, you don't think about lions being in an area like this. You think of lions are in Africa or someplace like that. Well, it talks about that some of those things were in this region because of the type of climate that was there. Over in Jeremiah, supports that there. Jeremiah 49, behold a lion coming up from the jungle of Jordan against the perennial pasture. You know, this comparison that God's making, he's using what's in the land to show that it tells us about some things about the land and some things that were there. So, you know, that's interesting to note as well. So think about the Jordan River here, some of the facts about it here that I thought were very interesting. You know, about 12 miles, it talks about from its central source, it flows into Lake Hula. And Lake Hula is not a lake we hear much about. 4.5 miles long, 3.5 miles wide, the land around it being kind of low and swampy. And since that lake is not there anymore, it doesn't really come up in the Bible story very much. But if you don't know where it is, it's that little small lake right up there north of the Sea of Galilee. So the Jordan River starting up here, you know, off of Mount Hermon and coming down, that's the first major body water that you get to. Think about the distance that some of these things cover. It talks here about the river dropping 900 feet over a very short distance. That's about 80 feet per mile as it is headed towards the Sea of Galilee. It says that it flows, if you're on page 5, it flows smoothly for about 1.5 miles after leaving Lake Hula, and then it begins this descent. So, you know, 11 miles from Hula to the Sea of Galilee as the crow flies, it drops 900 feet. And, you know, imagine how fast the river gets moving to drop that much. And that's the point that they're making there about it. And that because it's moving that fast, as you can imagine, unless you have a perfectly straight, concrete-lined riverbed, what's going to happen? It's going to start hitting the banks. It's going to start eroding. It's going to start making all kinds of turns. And so, you know, the Jordan River is not something you can just kayak down. It's when you start thinking about how fast it moves and the distance that it covers. And I think he even mentions that, in the lesson there. You know, most of that drop that he's talking about occurs in about 8 miles. And so it winds and weaves through the high banks and gets down to the Sea of Galilee. So the Jordan is 696 feet below sea level by the time it reaches the Sea of Galilee. And if you go back, I think it's in the first lesson that I gave you. I don't have it up here. There was a kind of a cross-cut section of the land of Palestine. It had some mountains on it, had the rivers, and it showed you where the sea level was. And it shows you how the Jordan River starts up here. Well, from your perspective, starts up here. And then starts to fall, and it falls below sea level and keeps going down. So, you know, there's some other factors about, besides just the slope, but gravity and how all that has into play with, you know, how quickly the Jordan River moves. So that's where it is by the time it reaches the Sea of Galilee. I'll mention the Sea of Galilee and then we're going to have to stop. But, you know, 12.5 miles long, 7.5 miles wide. The northwest shore, year-round crops, fruit and grain, and why is that? Because the northwest shore of it is over here towards the Valley of Jezreel. So this type of fertile area, there's good use of things over there. But as you continue to read about it, you know, communication with people, it says on the eastern bank was difficult because of what happens on the other side, which now we're going to talk about next week. But what happens on the other side which we'll talk about. You know, this whole part right here is called the Transjordan Plateau. It rises up. It's about 3,000 feet. And it's kind of a flat plateau area, you know. So imagine standing up on there. You're looking down to the Sea of Galilee, and the eastern border of the Sea of Galilee is that. So you're looking kind of straight down to a Sea of Galilee that's, you know, 600 feet below sea level from 3,000 feet up. So it's kind of a tableland on one side. You've got the sea and a great valley on the other side. Lots of things to imagine here. So I don't know if this week was any better than last week of trying to get information out and going really fast, but hold on to your lesson, and next week we will talk about the rest of that, the Dead Sea, the other side of the Jordan, and start to pull it into the Old Testament lands. Thank you very much.